You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
Step by step along this march, can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions and is sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at UMKC. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved.
Many storms can form an arch.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Plumbers Local 8 and Teamsters Local 41. Plumbers Local 8 has been a part of Kansas City since 1890. The plumber protects the health of the nation. And Teamsters Local 41 is the largest Teamster local in Kansas City and the surrounding area, representing approximately 6,000 members in many industries, including freight, UPS, dairy, food and beverage, bakery, warehouse, car haul, car dealers, car rental, parking, and show work. We help workers and their families achieve and live the American dream. Our members are hardworking, patriotic, caring, family-oriented, and civic-minded, and we proudly support our men and women in uniform that put their lives on the line every day to protect our rights and freedom. And we thank our underwriters for their contributions to the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI. We couldn't do it without them. On tonight's show, last month, Kansas City-based union Operating Engineers Local 101 opened its own healthcare facility, the Union Health and Wellness Center, for union members and their families. The union says it's a groundbreaking concept. I think we're going to agree. We visited the center, so stay tuned and find out about how they do it and whether other unions can join. In the news, how much would Trump's wall cost us? And France passes labor law reforms over massive protests by unions. Now for the news. Now that Donald Trump's nomination on the Republican ticket for president is official, and his border wall proposal is in the platform, we thought we'd ask a few questions about it. What would it cost, and is it feasible? So we did some research and found that we're not the first to ask. Although Trump's cost estimate has ranged from $3 to $10 billion, analysts at Bernstein Research estimate the wall would cost between $15 and $25 billion. A Washington Post fact-checker said $25 billion. Trump's public proclamation on the wall's height and dimension varies. He said 22 to 55 feet high, but the analysts used the dimensions of 40 feet high with an additional 7 feet underground and a length of 1,000 miles, not the whole border. It would require 7.1 million cubic meters of concrete at a price of $700 million at current prices. Precast tilt-up panels, which avoid the curing problems caused by heat on the border, would be supported by steel pillars. The analysts recommend investors should get into cement. A thorough article in The Atlantic talks of countless logistical and environmental challenges. Much of the land is either privately held and would need to be condemned through eminent domain, a really popular prospect. Much of it is national parkland, which is home to numerous endangered species. John Dean of Watergate fame says, "There are 35 border cities with 45 crossing points and 330 ports of entry on the border currently. Yet Trump talks about a big, beautiful door so the good ones can come back in. But how will that door handle the 350 million people who cross the border legally each year, many doing it daily?" Of course, If Trump gets elected, he may need the wall to keep many of us in.
The Black Ute Project 100, Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, and the Black Lives Matter occupied police union offices in Washington, D.C. and New York City Wednesday morning as part of the New Freedom Now campaign against police violence. The group's foremost demands are police accountability and a greater push to defund law enforcement. Activists in the nation's capital blocked off an entrance to the National Fraternal Order of Police. According to BYP 100 website, members of its D.C. chapter and BLM D.C. are there to demand that the cops stop paying dues to the union. The BYP 100 spokesman Clarissa McCants said, "The FOP acts like a college fraternity and is responsible for maintaining the harmful, lethal, unethical, unaccountable culture of policing while the families and communities impacted when officers brutalize civilians are left to mourn with little, if any, semblance of justice. Just like college frats that further rape culture by closing ranks to protect the members who are sexually assailants, the FOP has proven that their primary commitment is to protect the worst of their members behind the blue wall of silence, even in the most hideous of circumstances. The FOP is the most dangerous fraternity in America, and they need to be stopped." Meanwhile, New York City chapter of FOP 100 and Million Hoodies are staging a sit-in at the Patrolman Benevolent Association headquarters. They are demanding three things: disband the PBA, fire Officer Wayne Isaacs, defund the police, and fund black futures with an affordable housing, education, and mental health program. Isaac was recently stripped of his gun and badge and put on desk duty for fatally shooting an unarmed black driver on July 4th.
France's government pushed through Parliament a controversial overhaul of the country's labor law on Wednesday, the last step of a lengthy legislative process that has split President François Hollande's Socialist Party. The law eases rules for firing, hiring, and setting work hours, and it has been hotly debated. For months, angry protesters took to the streets of Paris and other cities for occasionally violent demonstrations against the proposal. Recent polls show that 70% of the public oppose the overhaul. Proponents of the measure say it is essential to reduce the stubbornly high unemployment rate and to make the economy more competitive. The government pushed the bill through the National Assembly, the lower house of parliament, without a vote because opposition from rebel socialist lawmakers meant it did not have a clear majority. This was the third time the government has bypassed lawmakers to advance the law by invoking a special constitutional provision, which is supposed to be used sparingly, but has been invoked three times recently. Opponents of a labor law overhaul argue that it weakens hard-won worker protections and dispute the notion that it will help jumpstart economic growth. Force Ouvrière, one of the main unions opposed to the changes, said in a statement that the bill was and remains sullied by its anti-democratic character and vowed to continue fighting it. The news tonight was read by Judy Ansel, Michael Savoir, and I'm Jen Zeman.
Good evening, and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Michael Savoie.
And I'm Lon Swearingen.
Our show tonight is on the new Union Health and Wellness Center provided by Local 101 of the International Union of Operating Engineers and Cerner for their family members and dependents. On Monday, Lon and I had an opportunity to visit their new facility and to get to know the staff of the clinic and the business agent of Local 101. Join us as we visit the clinic and get to know the healthcare provider, Cerner.
Michael, who is Cerner?
CERT is a health care company. I think that's the first thing to remember. A lot of people, a lot of folks here in the Kansas City area, because we grew up in healthcare information technology, and that's a stigma we're trying to move off of, right? Because that's still a big part of who we are and what we do. We automate hospitals. One out of three hospital beds in the United States is operated on CERT technology. So we're very proud of those roots, but we don't want to be known as just a healthcare IT company, right? That's pretty limited. So about 10 years ago, we started to morph into a healthcare company, and it started with the transformation of our own workforce. So what you see here, we did for our own population. So we have three health centers in the Kansas City area for Cerner Associates. That's where I go. I live out in Lee's Summit, but my primary care provider is in North Kansas City. So on paper, right, it doesn't make a lot of sense for me to drive from Lee's Summit to North Kansas City, but again, it's free and it's easy, what I started with, and the experience is better and different. I have that trust factor. But that's Cerner, right? And so we want to be known as a healthcare company. So our particular division is called Population Health Services. And so we are ramping up big time. This is a big focus for Cerner. We have big goals, and we want to actually be at $1 billion in sales and revenue for Population Health Services. So that encompasses health centers for employers and unions, wellness programs, and those types of services. So we want to be one of the largest providers in this space. Because right now, today, when you think of KU Med Center, St. Luke's, Truman Medical Center, you know, we have those guys, right? We're doing a lot of great things with them. So if you were to go to Truman Medical Center, you're going to be checked in and checked out for end-to-end on Cerner technology. And that's great, and we don't want to forget our roots. But one of the cool things that we can do is we can leverage that, right? We're leveraging the Cerner electronic medical record here. We're leveraging a lot of the cool things that we call Big Cerner. We get to take advantage of those fancy toys, our analytics packages, all of those things. So when you think of who Cerner is, I think it's important to understand that this, guys, is in our DNA, right? I mean, these health centers, we wouldn't have done this concept unless we did it for ourselves, right? It's a natural fit. And so we saw the clinical ROI, we saw the financial ROI. And that was in 2006, we opened our first one. And we actually just opened our fourth, in India. No, it's opening the beginning of August in India. We'll be opening our fourth health center because we have about 1,500 associates over there. But we saw the impact on our population.
A fourth health center, that is, you mentioned you had four here in town.
We have three in town.
Three in town,
And then the fourth one.
Okay.
The four, okay. We're opening one in India. So that would bring our total up to four for Cerner benefit eligible associates. Okay. So we'll be about 23,000 employees throughout the world in about 26 states. So very large company, very innovative as well. And Forbes, I think it was Forbes, actually ranked us as the 13th most innovative company in the world. So we're not going to stand still. We want to constantly bring new, fresh ideas to the table, whether it's technology-related, people-related, process-related. And again, we're early in the game with Scott, but you know, when we have our quarterly meetings with Scott, our goal is to bring new things to the table. These are the trends in healthcare. Here's what we're seeing with our health partners. Telehealth is picking up big time. Musculoskeletal, how can we curb all of these things? So it's a great company to work for. I've been at Cerner for about 4.5 years, and it is refreshing because there's a lot of other people who can stand up on-site health centers, right? And do a pretty good job at it. But for us, again, I think it's our why. You know, at the core, this is what we do. And for me, this is how I make my living, is selling health centers, selling wellness programs. It's something that we can believe in. And hopefully that comes across as as genuine, because my family uses it.
So it doesn't sound like you got a lot of competition in the health service provider.
Yeah, we do have a lot of competition. There are. So, you know, I would say there's probably 10 to 12 other providers that stand up and run health centers for unions mm-hmm. and employers throughout the mm-hmm. United States. And so, you know, even some health systems are looking into it, not necessarily in the Kansas City area, but let's say Stanford out in Northern California, right? This is a big business unit for them.
Yeah.
So health systems are starting to play in this space a little bit as well, because what they're recognizing is employers and unions, they're the number one payer of healthcare. Mm-hmm. They really are. More than Medicare, more than Medicaid, unions and payers are the number one payers of healthcare. So we're starting to see health systems get into the space a little bit too. So it is a very, very competitive market, mm-hmm. which is good for us. I mean, that keeps our feet to the fire, right? We've got to do an excellent job for Scott because he has a lot of options out there.
Yeah.
Michael, let's take a tour and hear about the philosophy of the service provider, Cerner.
Let's head back to a care suite. And, you know, one thing that we really tried to accomplish, we really want to change the model, right? In the community today, mm-hmm. when you go and get your annual exam, the first thing you may do is go sit up on an exam table. Mm-hmm. The doc may
right,
ask you a couple questions.
That's what I do.
You know, you're in and out of there in 10 or 15 minutes because, again, the traditional model is fee for service. Oh, man, I got to see so many people an hour and churn them so I can make my money.
Absolutely.
Providers really like this model because they're only going to see, on average, about 12 to 15 visits per day. Mm-hmm. So they can spend more time with you. So when the member comes into the care suite here, you'll be the provider, you'll be the patient. They sit and have a conversation. So visits are scheduled for 50 minutes in duration. We may spend 30 to 35 minutes here, focused on the individual's well-being. So yes, we want to learn more about your particular conditions, but let's talk about stress. Let's talk about financial well-being. Mm-hmm. We really want to get to the root cause of an individual's health and well-being. And so we have a long conversation. We pull up the individual's electronic medical record. We take vitals all right here in kind of a comfortable living room type of environment. Now, we still have the exam table over here for mm-hmm. our clinicians to evaluate and potentially treat the individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that we really try to focus on here is hiring clinicians that have high comfort levels of treating injuries and illnesses, mm-hmm. right? Because one thing that we want to do is treat as much under this one roof in a fixed cost environment as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, again, if there's something that our providers aren't comfortable with, we'll refer it out. But we watch those referral patterns very closely, right? Because we want to make sure that we treat as much here as we can. Mm-hmm. So the annual exam, I'll have Katie go through that in a little bit more detail of what that consists of. But we also have urgent care visits, and those are 20 minutes in duration. I mean, even think about that. That's a lot of time compared to, like, you know, maybe a CVS or Walgreens where you get in and out of there. Oh, you have an ear infection. Okay, boom, we're going to write you a script, and it's 5 minutes.
That's it, buddy. 5 minutes.
That's it.
Ten
and so
max.
We're still going to mm-hmm. take, you know, blood pressure on mm-hmm. every single visit that comes in here, every single one, just to get a good baseline understanding mm-hmm. of what's going on with the individuals. Mm-hmm. And so we'll load you guys up with some materials on your way out. It gives a full description of all the different scopes of services that might be good for, you know, the radio article for you folks mm-hmm. to have a good understanding of,
right.
of what's all included.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your approach, John, is more of a preventive medicine.
That's exactly right. I mean, yeah. we really want to change the shift from, you know, reactive care to proactive care. So at Cerner, we use a term, mm-hmm. you know, we split the word up health and care, mm-hmm. right? Because right now today, and even before the operators decide to build this health center, they're more focused on the care side of the equation. Right, we're going to do a lot of good things. I mean, they've been doing a lot of good things for several years, but they're still waiting for people to get sick or mm-hmm. to get injured or whatever. So focusing on the care side, we want to change that whole paradigm, and we want to focus on the health side of it. So ideally, in a perfect world, 3 out of 4 visits here, we want to be preventative. Mm-hmm. Now, we understand people are going to still wake up with a, you know, an ear infection, a sore throat. That's the cost of doing business. We want to see those things, right? Even if this prevents urgent care, ER utilization, right? A lot of people just go to the ER because they think that's where they should go when they're sick. So if we could still treat those folks, that's fine. But a big focus of this is preventative. And what we find is because we operate about 40 of these health centers throughout the United States, is about 50% of the folks don't even have a primary care provider. Hmm. So the ones that do, great. We're not asking them to change, right? If they're happy with their primary care provider, please stay with them. And that's an important thing to Scott and his fund. They need to have a primary care provider. So if we can capture that other 50%, those folks, I'm using national statistics, that's a win.
Sure.
And there's, you know, of the 50% that do have their primary care provider, maybe this one's closer, maybe it's more convenient, maybe they're unhappy with them. So that's really is the goal for this to be the hub. And what's different here versus the community is we want this to be their medical home, mm-hmm. right? Because if we do have to schedule a referral, something like that, we handle all of that for the member. We coordinate their care. Mm-hmm. Versus the community, they may say, well, hey, look, you're having a meeting or an appointment with an ortho on Thursday. You know, good luck. And then that's it. We coordinate all of that. We do the reminder calls, all of those things.
We asked John Howard, consulting sales executive for Cerner, to explain how the clinic works. He introduced us to Katie Keaton, who is the regional operations manager and a nurse practitioner. Let's listen in on how the services work.
Katie's is to help run it, right? She has a team here of 3 full-time employees. And so the main provider is an actual medical doctor. We have a registered nurse and a medical assistant. And that was something that was very important to Scott and the operating engineers was they wanted a doctor, right? They could have gone maybe a little bit more cost efficient, I guess, not efficient, but and gotten a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. But they felt like to be able to connect with their members and for them to buy in, they wanted to have a doctor staff it. So we're open 40 hours per week, Monday through Friday. And again, the goal is to have Saturday hours. The goal is to have extended hours to make this thing as accessible as possible. But it's baby steps, right? We want to make sure, and you know, after the solid month that we've had, we'll probably start engaging those conversations a little earlier. But we want to have Saturday hours. We want to have extended hours.
You know, one thing I think we can safely say, man, is that our healthcare model needs revision. Mm-hmm. And I think this is especially innovative, man.
Yeah. You know? Well, you have the pharmaceuticals supporting chronic disease management for so many years, and at some point you have to go to a physiological level with a member and work through understanding, you know, commitment to your health and well-being. Yeah. And that's, you know, that just reflects merely what John had mentioned earlier on our schedule model. You know, you can't do that in 10 minutes with someone. We've had some experiences so far with some of the members that have come in for appointments who don't even know what diabetes is, but they've been on metformin for so many years. They don't know about having, you know, quarterly hemoglobin A1C tests done. You know, so we ensure that there's that compliance, there's that accountability, there's enough time to have that dialogue between the provider and the member to make sure that they have a full understanding. We also have a very unique patient portal. So you can actually send a secure email message to your physician, to your nurse practitioner, to your nurse, to the MA. You have access to your full medical record, including any of your labs that you've had. As soon as they feed back through, like I order a whole, you know, white blood cell count, complete metabolic panel on you, within 24 hours we have those results back. You can just get online,
accessible,
pull it up. You know, and the provider, obviously, we get pooled results, so everyone's reviewing it, and then we're processing any type of follow-up or any additional scheduling. And back to kind of the Kansas City market and then our relationship collectively with so many organizations nationwide, we have that bargaining ability to be able to negotiate lower rates for community providers. So if we're sending a ton of people for imaging, we have that relationship with, you know, diagnostic imaging in Kansas City where, hey, we're going to be sending these referrals over to you all, and what you may charge back to insurance for this, since we can't capture it within our four walls, we want to negotiate a lower rate, you know, back to the employer.
I mean, we want to get this thing so big that we have our own imaging center, right? I mean, that's the plan, but again, it's like we got to temper, we got
to just
one step at a time. But we want the whole end to end. I mean, that's what we want, but we got to go at a good pace.
Is there a mental health component?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I described a little earlier that, you know, we could bring in behavioral health specialists, mental health specialists,
all right,
to actually consult and advise.
And we have the ability also, what we've really reinforced prior to opening, myself, my health center manager, met with the benefits administrator, as well as the EAP program director, to ensure that we had the statistics to show what percent of the 101 population was leveraging those opportunities. You know, because their EAP program is uniquely the same as ours at Cerner, and you're able to have those resources where you can get counseling for specific situations. They'll help you do a will for free. They'll help you with financial management. Mm-hmm. However, with the statistical data, it was not reflecting. I mean, 1.9% of members were acclimated to know that they could go get that service provided. So we're ensuring that in the meantime, we're pushing that out, you know, offering those resources to the members so they know that that's there for them by their employer. Most people are like, what is EAP? You know?
Yeah.
And we also have we have other health centers with chiropractic services, including Cerner. We have one health center with massage, Viasat. And so we've looked at different opportunities. I've engaged community and network dermatologists to come in and do free screenings on a quarterly basis or more frequent if needed. I actually talked to Scott 2 weeks ago about the potential to bring in a community podiatrist to provide a day of nail care for those diabetic patients that, you know, would have to go to a podiatrist in the community, because we have seen some trends that would support that need. And then it's just reaching out to those members and letting them know, based on our website page that we have specifically for the Union Health and Wellness Center. We have set up and proposed for October, they have a union meeting every third Thursday of the month, and we have asked a cardiologist that does our EKG overreads to join our physician and do kind of a presentation, speaking presentation on, you know, how diabetes may affect the body systems, what you can do to prevent, and then really engage those members to ask the questions that may relate specifically to their process.
KKFI brings you special coverage of the Republican National Convention, unlike what you'll hear anywhere else. Tune in for live coverage from Pacifica Thursday night at 7, then a special two-hour Democracy Now! On Friday from 8 to 10 a.m.
Media Kansas City, in partnership with Bird Productions, presents The Treasure of the Golden Monkey King. This production will premiere at this year's Kansas City Fringe Festival. Six performances presented at the Unicorn's Jerome Stage. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.kcfringe.org. 20% of all ticket sales will go to support KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City's community radio.
Hi, this is Larry J. celebrating KKFI's 28 years and my 25 years of broadcasting. Where? At Californo's in Westport. When? Sunday, August the 7th at 3 p.m. We have Kool-Aid and the Exact Change Band.
The sunrise in the east, lover. The deeper in the west.
And Linda Schell as special guest. That's at Californo's in Westport on August the 7th at 3 p.m. Reserve your seats at kkfi.org/events. This would be a benefit for KKFI and Children's International. So make sure you be there, Kansas City, because it's all about that love thing, baby.
Did you know that you can donate that unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling 866-628-2277.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum. We're taking a close look at the new health care facilities provided by the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 101, and Cerner.
Michael, you, John Howard, and Katie Keaton talked about how Cerner tailored the services at the clinic to the needs of Local 101's members. Let's listen in.
You've got the option to kind of tailor your service to Scott's specific needs.
We can.
Uh-huh.
We can. So, for example, we have some health centers that are focused just on occupational medicine. So if an individual's hurt on the job, they need drug screens or physicals, we could just stand up those health centers. No primary care, no urgent care. It's not our ideal model. Our mm-hmm. ideal model is a full, comprehensive, mm-hmm. end-to-end model. We could just have a urgent care plus model here where, and we have a couple of those. Again, not our preferred. Our preferred model is the primary care medical home mm-hmm. where we coordinate and handle the care from start to finish for some clients. Mm-hmm. But everybody's different, mm-hmm. right? And so, but we can tailor it specifically to the needs. Fortunately, with this particular space, when you talk about tailoring, yeah, the scope of service is part of it, but also the physical design is part of it. And for us, we got really lucky. We walked into 5,500 square feet of a big shell, very easy sandbox for us to go play in.
Yeah.
There's a large client in downtown Kansas City I was at last week. They're looking at this concept. I have 1,000 square feet. That's tough. Mm-hmm. That there's inherent limitations that we have there. So one thing that we need to focus on is making the experience good. And there's times where we have to walk away and say, guys, this isn't going to be a good experience for your members. So the space is one important consideration mm-hmm. when you're talking about customizing as well. But this is ideal. This space, this concept that you see here, because we never want the member really to leave this area. We come in here, do all the labs. If they have a drug screen, they can go in. Oh, we actually have a different room for the drug screens, right? Mm-hmm. But they need to take a specimen, a sample, anything like that. It's right here and convenient. We have two different corridors, so we really want to make sure privacy is a concern. This is the member corridor only. This is the provider corridor back here. I'll take you guys mm-hmm. back here in just a second. So we can hold private conversations and back. And so once the individuals are in, they're here for 95% of the time. They're not exposed to other members. They may walk by them in passing, but they're not gonna, I can tell you what, they're not gonna be sitting out that in that waiting room or reception lobby for 25, 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep in mind the experience from a privacy standpoint as well, and a confidentiality standpoint.
I don't know if you noticed, but there's only 3 chairs in the lobby.
Yeah.
And that's modeled specifically on limited wait times. Obviously individuals will walk in the beginning stages of opening a health center until they understand kind of our scheduling model and how we like to have the flow come through, and we'll mm-hmm. accommodate who we can accommodate, but we still want to focus and ensure that we're not overlapping, people aren't waiting, greater than mm-hmm. a few minutes out in the lobby. So that is something that we have conceptualized at most of our health centers, where there's very limited seating
yeah.
in the main room. Mm-hmm.
So services like mental health and
yeah.
Vision and dental, you yeah. refer
so
those?
We do. But the market, the industry's going there, right? So Children's Mercy, for example, mm-hmm. We actually operate their health center for their members. And we added 2 behavioral health specialists down there. That's still a big spin mm-hmm. for them, right? It's a stressful workforce. So behavioral health is something we could potentially bring on site. We use a phrase that says, let the data drive what we bring in next. So the data will tell us, as we get claims data, we get clinical data over time, we're going to be able to go to Scott and make recommendations of Scott. We think that we should bring in physical therapy or dental or vision. Mm-hmm. We could do all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. We can do dental. We can do vision. We can do it all on site. Mm-hmm. In the interim, what we do is we work very closely with the EAP. And so if there is a mental health, a substance abuse referral, something that we kind of uncover during an examination, we can work with the individual to make sure that they have all the resources and tools to help them connect to their EAP. Mm-hmm. Same thing with vision and dental. We want this to be the central hub of their care. And so we can make those referrals to in-network mm-hmm. providers as well.
It's an exciting concept. I like it.
Yeah, yeah, it is an exciting concept. And for years when unions were doing this, isn't a new concept. Unions yeah. have been doing this a long time. But up until recently, it's been more focused on work comp and occupational health, and that's fine. I mean, that's still a really important part of it. But now it's more focused on the holistic end-to-end a member's well-being. And so it really is a neat and exciting and growing concept.
So in the end, then, it really becomes cost-efficient.
That's the goal. That's the goal. So when we ran a feasibility study for the union, what we found was in year one, very modest, but we did find a savings of about 1.2 to 1 ROI. And that grows, I think we grew all the way up to about 1.4 to 1 ROI. So by year three, the goal is that they're saving 40 cents on the dollar by utilizing this particular health center. Now, the more unions that we have that utilize the health center, we expect that ROI to go up because their expense ratio will go down, right? And so that'll help the ROI equation. So that's the goal. And we tried to come from a very realistic point of view. We didn't sing a 4 to 5 to 1 ROI just to win the business here at Operating Engineers. We took a very analytical approach. We looked at claims data. We looked at eligible members. And we said, look, guys, even if we get 20 to 25% to use this in year one, that's it. 20 to 25%. So we basically said 4 out of 5 people will not use this health center. Although we want them to, we want to kind of plan for the worst and hope for the best, that we're still going to have an ROI with that. And so, again, very modest. I mean, our goal is we'd rather under, you know, promise and over deliver with that ROI assumption. So there's a lot of things that we looked at, it was a very detailed process. We worked with our consultant, several other individuals to help us go through this process.
Tell me, Lon, did you look at plans for growth and development?
Yes, Michael, I discussed those plans with the Operating Engineer Local 101 with business agent Scott Reddick.
What I'm asking is, how did this come about as far as the money going into this program? Obviously, you say it's free, but it really isn't. It's coming out of dues, right?
No, it's coming out of contributions to our health and welfare fund made by the employer, which is part of our collective bargaining agreement.
Okay.
So we go in, negotiate a contract.
Right.
Yeah, so right now our contribution rate for health and welfare is $7.25 an hour. That's paid by the employer. So of that $7.25, we as trustees on the fund, we've got 3 management trustees and we've got 3 union trustees. We take and look at things and see what kind of services can we provide our membership for that $7.25.
Right.
This will be included as one of the services we provide, just like we provide dental, eye care, anything else. Yeah, I mean, this is just another benefit we're providing based off of the contribution rate.
Better than what you were doing, and now it's really looking like it was a good thing.
Well, and the other is still available, too.
Right. Okay, I'm not saying that. Just saying, if you go to here, you got something that's going.
Well, and what John was saying about the savings part of it, that wasn't a driver in this so much as trying to get our guys to use it.
That's why I asked the question.
Now, if that's the case where he says we're going to see these savings, okay, so for example, last year, pharmaceutical costs through the roof.
That's what I'm saying.
And it caused our contribution rate to have to go up to cover that because we're self-funded.
Right.
We pay our own claims. We pay for everything. So when your pharmaceuticals rose like they did last year, almost $4 million, you've got to come up with the money. So the money negotiated through the collective bargaining agreement, we have to use part of that to go pay for the increases in the health and welfare contribution. So when he starts talking about savings there, so if we can make that start going down, well, those negotiated wage increases that we've negotiated for, maybe it won't go to health and welfare this year, it'll go to on the check, so to speak.
Right.
And that's the plus side of what could possibly come out of this.
So how long has this been going on now?
We opened in June.
All right.
June 15th.
And do you have a statistic on how many people have used it so far?
I haven't had an update probably in 2 weeks. I know we've had many days where we were completely booked.
Right.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and of course, it's going to take a while.
Right. That's what
the hardest thing we're having a hard time with is figuring out what connects with the memberships. You know, I get so many that show up for my union meetings every month. That they're easy. You know, I'm standing right there. I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we send out a lot of mailings. We've put things on the internet. We've done a lot of ways to get people to get involved with this, and something's just not clicking with the membership, because I don't know if that our mail isn't interesting to them or what it is.
Well, it may be if you get some that are coming back, deal, mm-hmm. to have them talk to some of the other, because face-to-face usually does a lot better than emails or all that. And I don't know why I'm suggesting that, but that's something I've been taught, that the face-to-face thing works a lot better than any big advertising on that.
And we've got, like I said, our members, okay, a big job site for us is the Gateway Project out there, mm-hmm. Clarkson Construction's working on. We'll have a large number of operating engineers in one small area there, and if they start talking, then that just kind of filters out everywhere else. But as our group as a whole, I mean, we might only have two, maybe three guys on a particular project, you know, so not everybody's all grouped together all the time. And but the word of mouth is going to be the key to this, and it'll get out there. It's just, you know, it's
it takes time. You've only been around
a month. So
I know
we've had over 100 visits, but I don't know what number over 100 we've had since, since we started.
And I'm not trying to push it. I'm just trying to get a predict how many people are coming in pretty regularly. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's...
John mentioned that there's an effort being made, in fact, being negotiated right now, to bring in the pipe fitters, did he say?
Yeah, he's got the plumbers and the sheet metal workers they're working on right now, actually getting numbers from them to see what their cost for the clinic would be. Mm-hmm.
So would they have a different clinic, or would they use this?
No, we were talking about sharing this. We went with the name of Union Health. We were lucky. We had enough numbers right here in the Kansas City vicinity to potentially... keep that.
It's a good fit for you too, because you had vacant space.
Now, if we can get some other groups to come in, you know, these are smaller population locals than we are, mm-hmm. so they can come in and help fill the hours that we're not. And this thing goes down, and their cost will be down. And it really ought to work. I mean, if we could just get 7 or 8 trades going on this thing, there's no reason we couldn't have these in several areas all over the city.
Yeah.
I mean,
I like the concept. I really think it's a great concept.
I mean, all the way around. I mean, this is...
I'm glad we could do it. I was... And I, you know, sometimes the management and union trustees might not always see eye to eye on this or on certain issues. Our trustees were all over this. You know, Cerner came in and did their John came in and told us what it was about, and I'd already visited their clinic and seen what it was made up of, and I was all for it all along. Mm-hmm. Our guys just grabbed right a hold of it and said, yeah, let's go with this. And so,
any kind of expansion of this? Is there anything else that you guys want to be done? Is there going to be...
We want the pharmacy eventually. Cerner can offer us big savings with the pharmacy.
Now, with the software that
Cerner.
Uh-huh. The idea of keeping a running total of what problems are coming off the line. In other words, so they have a built-up statistic of what happens in the field that keeps coming up.
that they could maybe work with.
That are unique to operating engineers.
Right, engineer.
Yeah.
They're getting twisted arms, or they're doing this or that, and it's always coming up. So now we have statistics on this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Either there's something wrong out there, or the guys are doing something wrong that they don't.
Well, that's why they change. The tailor-made kind of suit the provider to the unique needs of the.
But if you can have the statistics and prove it, then you can do something. Maybe it is what's going on out there, and it can be changed because of what we have. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
So that'd be a great thing.
Yeah, they pinpoint. You know, if we got too many guys are coming in with high blood pressure.
Right.
Well, how are we gonna treat these? You know, how do you help these guys?
Yeah. Right. Is there something that they can do for themselves?
Yeah.
Or is it something that we have to do for them? Mm-hmm. What is it? And that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated the tour, and you're friendly as all get out. You taught me some things that I didn't have any idea about. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
This seems like it's kind of a concept, man. It's got a tremendous potential from my perspective.
Yeah.
And it could become the model of healthcare or a submodel, let's say.
Well,
I think it has very good potential
because what it's doing is, and this is going to sound odd, from the bottom up. In other words, what does the patient need?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to provide it. And we're going to provide it so that they feel comfortable. They're going to be asked to have their input into what's going on. And that's something that we aren't doing much because of the cost. You go in there, and it, like he was saying, 10 minutes and you're out. And nobody knows anything. It's just, this is what we do. We take the blood pressure, we do this.
Take your $20 copay and
see
you
later.
You know? Yeah.
And say, and mine was
give you
50
a script on the way out, man. But that's anymore, you
that's
know.
That's one thing we were adamant about from the very beginning was there will be no copay. There will be... You won't have to meet the deductible requirement, so you can just use it. That's all we ask, just use it.
Now, what happens if someone it has to go to the hospital?
No, then, you know, our normal coverage takes care of.
Okay, so you have another coverage.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we still have the same coverage we've always had. We just added another benefit, basically.
All right. That's what I wanted to know, because that's something, too.
We changed no coverage at all.
Well, okay.
In fact, they, who was one of our advisors and, you know, actuary or whoever in our trustee meetings would bring up, well, you know, you could start making them, I don't want to use the word force, but you could herd them towards your clinic by saying, well, if you don't use the clinic, your copay is going to go up to this. Or I said, no.
You don't want to do that.
We want them to come here because they want to come here.
And let it sell itself because it will.
It will.
Yeah.
And the one thing is that goes with is something that is really hard to have in the workaday world, and that's trust. If you'd have done the other, there would be no trust.
Oh, yeah. No.
With doing it the way you're doing it, the trust is there. Mm-hmm. Hey, I didn't have... And then he goes over to his friend. I didn't have to pay anything, and they did all this stuff for me.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
You can go in there, and it doesn't take any time.
I got to see a few of the feedback comments that some of the members have wrote after their experience down there, and there's not been one negative, I can tell you that. So.
Well, the way they are doing, I doubt if they will get any.
Yeah.
Unless the person's already got a problem and he's venting something else.
We've got a few like everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Some guys you can't make happy, but that's just goes with the territory.
And then I'm going to ask you about, do you have a card or business card?
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Well,
is there anything else you want?
Most of my stuff was covered in the quite a few questions then. John covered it pretty well.
John's a professional at this.
Oh, yeah.
He is a professional.
But I really appreciate it, and I think that...
Now, how big audience do you guys think you...
Well, you know, we've got a 100-mile radius in terms of... Now, who's listening, we don't know. But
yeah,
we get a lot of good feedback.
Good.
I mean, we've been doing...
Well, it's been going on for a long time, so yeah, there are people that lock their time on it and make sure they're listening.
And it's, I think we're well-received. Oh, so you can go to the website and you can pick it up whenever you want.
All right, and the
you'll leave me one of your cards. I'll make sure they know that.
Okay. Yeah. HeartlandLaborForum.org.
Okay,
get
that's
you
what
to
I
our,
just wanted to make sure that I had. So.
And,
okay.
Okie doke, Scotty. Man, we really appreciate you.
Hey, no problem.
Time,
thank
man,
you guys
and,
for
and
coming over
with us.
Really appreciate you
giving us an opportunity.
I
there.
Give you a poster thing.
Good evening, Kansas City, on this extremely hot Kansas City afternoon. This is Angie Williams from the law offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Rights. Today I wanted to talk a little bit about something pretty exciting that happened out of the Fifth Circuit, which is exciting in and of itself because hardly anything good ever happens in the Fifth Circuit, and that's what makes this extremely exciting. And this was a ruling, excuse me, this was a ruling regarding Texas's ID law relating to voting. Now, if any of you have been following this, Texas has a law relating to specific forms of identification that you need in order to register to vote. There's been a lot of litigation about this. These types of laws are popping up in states all over the place, including Kansas. Missouri's trying some of the shenanigans as well, although it hasn't gotten nearly as far. Texas, it's actually passed, and it's made its way to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, who just Wednesday said that this voter identification law violates the Voting Rights Act, and the states must find a way to accommodate voters who face hardship in obtaining these necessary documents. They said that they found that the Texas law disproportionately affects people of color who more often have difficulty obtaining these documents or who may not have the identity documents already. They didn't strike the law down entirely, but they said you've got to come up with a new procedure. The law as it is isn't working. You have to come up with a new procedure to assist potential voters that don't have these identification requirements in order to get the requirements. Excuse me. Now, the other thing that they did was they also sent this back to the lower courts to determine whether or not the Texas legislature acted with a discriminatory purpose when they passed the law in 2011. Now, this is huge because if they find that they did act with specific discriminatory purpose, then that would force additional judicial oversights relating to any further Texas election legislation. That's a pretty big deal. Now, the reason I'm so excited about this is because you may have heard and you may remember the Fifth Circuit and recent horrible decisions related to the executive action decision for President Obama. It is one of the notoriously most conservative judicial circuits in the country. So if they are saying, you know, I think that this law is pretty bad, then it's really, really bad. Now, how this affects us locally is a pretty big deal because Kansas already has a pretty difficult voter ID law related to the identification that is necessary that already earlier this year has been held to be unconstitutional. But the Secretary of State, Mr. Kobach, has decided to ignore that judicial order and continue going forward with this process because he is appealing the case and feels like he's going to probably win. Now, the ACLU has recently just filed a new lawsuit to try to get an injunction for this November election. Now, one of the things that the proponents of this law always say is that voter fraud is real, that this is something that's a huge process. But in the few years where this has been, particularly in Kansas, because this is something local, has been like the big push of the Secretary of State, there has been two prosecutions related to voter fraud, quote unquote. And both of those have been people, in fact, elderly people, who moved and re-registered to vote and then voted in an election, not a national election, but voted once in like their old address and then voted again at their new address in a local election, like for a school board or something like that. So none of them was like, you know, the same person voted twice for president or the same person voted twice for senator or something like that. It was one, they voted once for something local and then they moved and they voted again for something local somewhere else. Two people in the however many number of years that this has been a big push and supposedly an enormous problem in the state of Kansas. Those are the only two people that they have filed charges on. As I said, Missouri has tried to get this law passed, but they haven't done as good a job as Kansas. Well, they have done as good a job as Kansas not getting it passed. We do not have this in Missouri right now because I believe the governor has not signed it in to law, and so that's where we are. This is an issue that is not going away. There is going to be continued efforts to try to restrict people's voting rights, and so this is something that people need to be concerned about and continue to watch and watch the news on. Like I said, this is a pretty big deal, this decision out of the Fifth Circuit, and I would imagine that other states were going to start seeing circuit decisions, and if they differ from the Fifth Circuit, that's when we may even see a Supreme Court decision about it. That's what's called a split in the circuits, and that means one circuit says one thing and one circuit says another. So, something to watch. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. This is Angie Williams from the Law Offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Rights. Be safe and be cool, Kansas City.
And this is the Heartland Labor Forum calendar for July 21st, 2016. The Midwest School for Women Workers, July 24th to the 28th. Roosevelt University, Chicago. Contact Stephanie Seawall for information and scholarships. The True Cost, Who Pays the Cost for Our Clothing? A documentary. July 26, 7 p.m., Plaza Library, Large Conference Room, sponsored by Cross Border Network. The 4th Annual UAW Region 5 Golf Tournament, Gary Jones Charity Golf Tournament. Saturday, August 20th, 11:30 for registration. 1 o'clock, shotgun start. Sunflower Hills Golf Course, 141 North 122nd Street, Bonner Springs, Kansas. For more info, call 913-342-7330. And that's been the calendar for this week.
And you can find our calendar at our webpage, heartlandlaborforum.org, where you can find archived shows as well as our upcoming schedule. You can also volunteer for the Heartland Labor Forum. We're always looking for new volunteers. Just give us a call or email us. You can find that information at heartlandlaborforum.org. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show will be We Can Do It, Women in the Trades. And thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Stay tuned for the Thursday night special.
You have been listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. We are sponsored by the Institute for Labor Studies at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Our volunteers come from a wide variety of workplaces and unions. We are supported by many Kansas City area unions and the AFL-CIO. To talk back to us, to volunteer, or to let us know about news or events, call us at 816-235-1470 or go to www.heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI, UMKC, or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here on 90.1 FM KKFI.